Welcome to another great author interview here at the Poison Pen Bookstore, virtually, of course, during this whole pandemic and non-touring situation. Today, I am really lucky to have an author not only who I consider a friend, but one of my favorite writers of the thriller and horror genre. I'd like to give a big warm welcome to Weston Oakes, who is here to discuss and talk about his two latest books, Alien Infiltrator and Bone Chase. Welcome, Weston. Welcome.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
It's been too long. It's been about, I'd say a good year and a half, 2 years since I've seen you.
The whole COVID year, we don't count. That's like a leap year that just didn't exist.
That's exactly it. It was one day, one after the other.
It was crazy. So let's just pretend that didn't happen. Okay.
That's absolutely right. But I'm really lucky because Bone Chase came out back in December, and I think that things were a little crazy. It's always that holiday time period. We didn't get to discuss the book. So we set up some time this month.
It was a tough time for a book to come out, like the end of COVID. And, you know, nobody wants to promote anything. Nobody wants to, you know, have any book signings. And basically, I was just totally dependent on fans and stuff like that. So, you know, it was a tough time for books to come out, you know.
It was. And it was a strange time to do it. So at the end of this month, Bone Chase comes out in paperback through Simon & Schuster, I believe it's the Emily Bessler imprint, right? I could be wrong.
It was Saga
imprint.
Yeah,
that's right. It's hard to remember who's who and where's where. And
well, they reconfigured a couple times over the last 2 years, so you know they're.
Well, this is awesome. So, Bone Chase is a thriller in the lines of kind of a James Rollins-esque or Doug Preston Lincoln Child novel focused around some really great mysteries, specifically the Nephilim, which are the giants of the Bible, if you're reading things through correctly, and a lot of conspiracy theorists and different groups like to study the Nephilim specifically because it's such a neat and weird portion of the Bible that discusses what Nephilim are. Were they angels? Were they a combination of angels and man? They were described as giants. And so you've written a thriller kind of around the history and the mystery of the Nephilim. Can you give us a little bit of some insight onto Bone Chase?
Well, I was lucky enough to have James Rollins read it and give me a great blurb. I think it's on the cover. He's a fine man, great author, you know. But, you know, if when you're a working author like I am, most of the time you're contracted for books. So I'm always contracted for, like right now I'm contracted for 4 books in the next 2 years I have to write. And that's just the business. And I love it. I love that part of the business. But there comes along an idea that you want to work on, and that's your side hustle. And so my side hustle for 3 years was to work on this idea called, at first it was called Bone Rush, and then they called it Bone Chase. And it was the idea that what if giants really did exist? They just do, period. They exist. And they've been hidden because, let's face it, if a giant was to walk down the street of New York, everybody would start either trying to kill it or worship it or both. Because, I mean, a 14-foot, a 20-foot, a 70-foot tall creature, it's a human kaiju, right? I mean, people wouldn't know how to react. So they have to keep it silent. They have to keep it private. And of course, I have the Council of David, you know, which is based upon the David and Goliath, and they're against it. And then I have the six-figured men. So I have a lot of different groups who are working to this. But what really started it out was the idea about this out of work mathematician who gets a box, and he gets in the box and says, don't open this box. And of course, the first thing you want to do is open the box. And it says, you've opened the box, but don't go any farther. And of course, it goes farther. And then once it goes farther, it gives him a list of rules, which is, you know, don't go on the internet and type this. Don't go to this web server. Don't do this. Don't do that. And last of all, don't trust a six-fingered man.
Mm-hmm. And it goes from there. It's hard to go into a lot of great detail about it because I think then we move into spoiler territory. But one of the things that I really enjoyed about this book is you're taking us all over the world and the suspense does not let up. Things are pretty calm, I would say, on the first two pages. And then after page two, you really start ratcheting up the suspense and moving your poor character through everything. Because at first, you know, he's not really wanting to be a part of this adventure and a little confused on why he was the person sort of selected out of his entire family to get passed along this treasure, this secret that his father had recently discovered. You put him through some hell, that's for sure.
Pat, it's interesting because, you know, I write a lot of military fiction, you know, military horror, military thriller, military sci-fi. And I wanted this person who is as unmilitary as possible to be the hero of this novel. I wanted somebody who's just a regular Joe, somebody who doesn't know anything about anything. He's an out-of-work high school math teacher from Nebraska, right? Yeah. And he's thrust into this to be the hero of the novel. And so I wanted that to happen because I wanted to now have the narrative go through him. So I thought that was really interesting.
And I like the fact that you are putting him through hell, but you're putting him with some pretty competent people that are going to keep him alive, hopefully, throughout this book. And it is interesting because, Wes, when I read your books, I was expecting your main character to be ex-military somewhere along his background, and discovering that he was a regular Joe was a lot of fun. But you really know military very well, too, and you write military extremely well. I think you're one of the top-notch military fiction writers in the United States. I mean, your Task Force Ombra series, Spring Sky is one of my all-time favorite adventure horror series where you combine both adventure and horror, and you really know soldiers. So was it exciting and a little difficult to think, okay, I'm so used to writing these soldiers, I know soldiers really well. You've worked, you've had a career in military before being a full-time writer. Was it tough getting into the mindset of somebody who wasn't a soldier or who did not have that military background and trying to figure out how to keep them alive throughout this entire novel?
No, it wasn't. Because, you know, at heart, none of us are soldiers. I mean, at heart, we're all just regular human beings. We're all just regular people. You know, I just happen to have another side hustle, which is being a soldier. And I've done it for 35 years so far. And the thing is it's really easy to tap into being a regular person because, I mean, I'm surrounded by them my whole life. But I cheated in this book, remember, because his co-protagonist, Shani, is a reserve military intelligence officer who kind of helps him through some of the more ingenious wickets as it goes along, because I wanted to also not only have a normal Joe protagonist, but I wanted to reverse it. I wanted to have instead of somebody saving the princess, I wanted the princess saving somebody. So here we have it where where the female ends up saving the protagonist over and over and over.
Shani is one of my all-time favorite female characters. And I'm glad that you said the princess saving the hero, because I think that, you know,
I did that intentionally, absolutely, because I mean I have a wife, a mother, I have a daughter, and they're all strong people that I totally want to represent them in books.
Absolutely. Your wife Yvonne, who's another great horror writer, she's a pistol, you know, and she's a great artist as well. I've seen some of her artwork that she's done. She does a really great job. It's always nice when you're present, because both you and Yvonne usually come together. So it's, you know, we miss that portion of it. But yeah, Yvonne, I could see you pulling in some characteristics a little bit from Yvonne into Shani a little bit. Which is pretty cool.
And also the thing about Bone Chase is that you note that I have facts all the way through it.
You do.
And these facts are things that have been published.
Mm-hmm.
They're things that are part of history. For instance, in the 19-teens, it's a fact that the Smithsonian got rid of and destroyed all their giant bone artifacts.
Interesting.
It's a fact. It comes from the Smithsonian.org website, and they talk about it, but they won't go in depth and say why. So there's a lot of these different things. And up until the 1930s, it was really common in newspapers to talk about finding giant bones and evidence of giants all the way through America and South America. And then after that, it was suddenly it's like nothing. Suddenly it's like UFOs, where, oh no, if you believe in that, you have to be stupid.
Right.
So I'd love to play on that. Granted, it's pseudoscience because you can't prove it, right? But one of the reasons you can't prove it is because a lot of the evidence has been destroyed.
It's one of those interesting conspiracy theories that periodically comes up. And one of the very beginning chapter that you're talking about, you're talking a little bit about Art Bell and George Norrie, who are really interesting to listen to. And of course, they're always going to bring up the subjects of the strange and the different. And whether or not you agree with them or you disagree with them, if you think that, you know, some of the people that they bring on are genius or crackpots, they always have an interesting discussion. And I liken this book to, you know, learning about it, like what you would learn from listening to somebody on George Norrie or Art Bell, and discussing the Nephilim and who were they, or who could they possibly have been, or who are these giants, and what is the theory behind this? And I'm wondering, was it one of those episodes, or was it something that you had read that sort of triggered you and said, bingo, this is what I know. This is the hook. This is the interesting myth, legend, whatever you want to call it, that you wanted to explore.
So yeah, Art Bell and George Norrie they run the Kingdom of Nye, which is an AM radio station that goes from, it's coast to coast AM, right? If you're driving at night through the desert, that's what you listen to, because that's all that's on, unless you have, you know, Sirius or whatever. But it's really entertaining because of all the things that they talk about. But no, it was the first thing that got me was the whole Smithsonian. I read about how they destroyed dinosaur or their giant bones. I'm like, destroyed giant bones? What? First of all, I didn't know you had giant bones. Second of all, why would you destroy them? What made you decide to do that? Because it's not like they took up more room. I mean, you could destroy all of the, I don't know, other things, but giant bones seem to be pretty rare. So why would you do that?
Yeah.
it almost begged the question that they were ordered to do it. So at that point, I just began buying some books, and if you look at the back of the acknowledgments, I acknowledge a lot of folks who I use for research. But what's interesting is that when you look at the various versions of the Hebrew Bible way back in the day, most of them were written in Greek at the time. And so what happened is a bunch of Greek scholars got together, 70 of them, in fact, and they decided how they were going to recraft all these different versions of the Old Testament into one Old Testament. And they chose to take out the word giant in almost all cases and replace it with messenger. And then later on, that messenger was then called angel, right? But in the beginning, it was always giant.
Interesting.
So we're talking the first 200 or 300 or 400 years of people creating this, it was giant. And then it was only later on that angels existed.
Yeah. And, you know, and then there's the whole idea of what these giants were and the premise of what the Nephilim were, and it's debated by scholars, but a lot of these giants were considered perhaps the combination of both human and alien, or not alien, angel. I'm thinking of.
Or they could have preceded man, because the fact is, you know, Genesis 6, right, says there were giants on the earth in those days.
Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating.
Period. There were giants on the earth in those days. It's what it says. I mean, if you're a biblical scholar and you decide not to believe in that, well, I guess you're picking and choosing then, aren't you?
That's for sure. So what was this research delve like? Were you reading absolutely everything that you could get your hands on?
It was great. I spent so much time. I mean, I 3 years of research just to write this book. I had so many hundreds of pages of notes. And it wasn't until, and this is all in between, you know, I'm working on other projects like Burning Sky and Dead Sky and the Umbra novels and SEAL Team 666 and all this other stuff like that. And then when I had a break in my schedule, I went, okay, so it's time to write the book. Who's going to be your protagonist?
Del McCune has kind of an interesting question for you. And he asks, was the six-fingered man in Bone Chase related to the Coast to Coast episode on December 3rd, 2008, where Steve Quayle talked about the six-fingered giant found in Afghanistan?
No, it's not. You can tell my friend Del that it's not that at all, because polydigitism, six fingers, is an indication of Nephilism, is an indication of giantism. It's always been that way, because most of the times when they find giant bones, the giant bones have six fingers. And so there's actually people who regular folks who are born with six fingers, and those folks a lot of times will get that last digit cut off. But the fact is that that's a sign that they're related to Nephilims.
Interesting. Really interesting. So were you talking to researchers? Were you talking to people who were really interested in this? Was it mostly interviews, or was it mostly delving through books and articles and things like that?
No, as a college professor, I I love doing research. Research has always been my thing. I mean, if there was no internet, I would still love it because I would just live in a library and I would have stacks of books beside me because I love the idea of just diving down through something to get to something else. And it's amazing. There is a website, a Facebook site called Real Giant Stuff that I followed. And I name checked them in the novel. Uh-huh. And I used them in the novel. And I've since sent the one of the owners of the Facebook page a copy of the book, but I haven't received any response. I hope that they took it as a really good homage because I didn't denigrate them at all. But the whole idea is that if you go to Real Giants on Facebook, I mean, every day they're populating information about, you know, different things that are found or different ideas. And it's super interesting. But once again, I get it. It's pseudoscience. It's not pure science. But I mean, there was once a time to where we didn't know what oxygen was. We just knew we could breathe. And now we know what oxygen is. So maybe there'll become a time in the future where we'll uncover an actual real giant.
Wouldn't that be interesting? I mean, right now, people are fascinated yet again on aliens, right? Aliens are just about everywhere where they're hitting the news and talking about these mysterious unidentified flying objects. And people are really intrigued by that. And I think that, I don't know if the pandemic has gotten us to start thinking a little bit more about maybe some things that we just decided to kind of put aside, and it's fun to think and sort of obsess a little bit by, but I think that we're getting some, I think it's these sort of subjects, people are getting really interested in again.
I think so. You know, a lot of people make fun of people who believe in UFOs or whatnot. And, you know, there's a lot of science against it and there's a lot of belief against it. But I just saw a post, I think it was yesterday, from Terry Jacobs, an old friend of mine. And she said, disbelieving in UFOs is the same thing as taking a spoon in the ocean and taking a sip of ocean water and just and not believing in sharks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good analogy. That is a really interesting analogy. Yeah, I mean, we simply don't know what's out there, and it's fun to explore these myths and the legends, and there's reasons why they're out there. There's reasons why people wrote them down and wrote down this information, whether it was allegorical or whether it was literal, we'll never really know. But I always find that really, really fascinating. And I love it when thrillers get in there and talk about this allegory and they talk about, you know, you take a stance and you say, this is what I'm going to do and this is what I'm going to run with it. And one of the things that I found was it was so clear you enjoyed what you were researching that this entire book is a complete and utter blast. It is so much fun to read.
One of the grace points I made in there, which I think is I could have done a better job with, but I liked what I did, is, you know, this information was passed on to many people. And so when my main character is reading on it, he can see the comments that are made from other folks, right? About how no, this is wrong. Oh yeah, this is true. And how people, the other people who have read this and followed this trail, who have done the bone chase, right? Mm-hmm. You know, commented on it. And that took me down a Facebook realm, because I mean, in real life now, everybody comments on everything. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of my way of, you know, making it almost a social media-esque type of thing.
It is interesting because, I mean, you can't get away nowadays without having a thriller, and especially one where you're going to implement technology and not bring in social media. Social media is just, it's too big. I mean, here you and I are talking to quite a few people online about your latest book. It's so integral to our discussions anymore and how we keep track of that information. It's kind of cool.
And you talked about thrillers and about how readers really like the esoteric. I mean, that's why they like Preston and Child, right?
Right.
That's why I like James Rollins. I mean, all three of them are just amazing at what they do. And I just heard that, who is it? It's going to star in the movie version of The Monster of Paris, which is speaks fluent Spanish and fluent Italian. Starred in Desperado. Starred in 13th Warrior.
Not Antonio Banderas?
Antonio Banderas, yeah. He's going to star in that movie. And I'm and when I saw that, I'm very excited because I love him as an actor. I mean, we just watched 13th Warrior the other day again, which is based on the Michael Crichton book, Eaters of the Dead.
I was really intrigued by the fact that so many of your books have been optioned and you've gone through the pathway of this. So SEAL Team, for instance, Task Force Umbra, I think had something attached to it. It's been a while since we've talked about it. But I do want to ask a quick question. Okay. Yes. Sorry about that. I had to look up the name of your Aliens book as well, not Aliens Infiltrator, but the game that is going to be based off of it. So you've been attached a lot to these different Hollywood films, or they've bought off of them. And I think part of it is because your books and your thrillers are so cinematic in scope. Are you hoping to see one of these release out into the theaters or on Netflix or Hulu or whatever streaming source or television?
Come on, Pat. What kind of question is that? Come on.
Oh, yeah.
Of course. Of course. I mean, as I tell people pretty much everywhere, I'm a kid who grew up in a trailer park a long time ago, and I have this vision of a four-year-old me standing there with a book bag, and he's supposed to be a really happy person, but he looks like the most miserable child in the world. And I keep thinking of that person every time that I start writing something. Uh-huh. Because he would be so impressed about what he had become. And it's hard work. I'm not saying that, I didn't work hard. It's just, I came a long way from that place. And to even be optioned for a movie and to be talking with the Rock staff like I have been for a couple months, it's just amazing. I mean, it's incredible. So yeah, of course it would.
It's such a challenge. I mean, I think I'm thinking back to CJ Box with Big Sky, which became a huge hit. And how many times that those books have been optioned and bandied around, both the Joe Pickett and that series, until finally something happens. It's just the right place and the right time. I feel like Bone Chase for you is the right book at the right time. Because yeah. I think that these books, it's such a great thriller, and it's at a time where people are wanting to kind of delve into the esoteric. Preston Child, James Rollins have become incredibly popular, and I think that you fit in really nicely into that group because all three of you or four of you are such incredibly strong thriller writers. And it's not your first rodeo, but you've always been a really great writer. And even your horror, like Burning Sky, for instance, I think it's mostly thriller with some horror in it, versus, you know, where some people might say it's all horror. I feel, you know, you've got so much going on with your soldiers and the adventures that they go on that I feel like it's more of a thriller. I just wanted to say, I think that you've kicked this book really out of, hit it out of the ballpark.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And I really, hearing you say that means a lot, because, you know, you see so many books coming across your table, not only working in libraries, but working in the Poison Pen, that, you know, you're a very discriminating taste.
I love books. I love reading. So, and sometimes my favorite books aren't always everybody's favorite books, but I, you know, if you can do something unique and interesting, I always think that that's something where it should be nodded to. Tori Eldridge asked a really good question, and Tori's author of the book, The Ninja Daughter. I don't know if you've read Tori's book.
I'm a very good friend of Tori.
I'm gonna have to give Tori a quick nod and a shout out here.
Please do.
And she wants to know if Bone Chase is going to be the start of a new series that you're going to be doing.
Well, Tori, like anything else, it depends on the publisher. I would love to continue Ethan's journey. I left it open at the end to where there can be more. Especially with Susie and her little remote control bumblebee. So yes, I do want it to be, but it's all dependent upon the publisher, you know. It's all dependent on sales and what they want to do and everything else. I did sign a 2-book deal, so we'll see if the second book is going to be the sequel to this. That'd be great.
So the incentive of listening to Weston I speak is that I hear the Poison Pen, Weston's kind enough because he's way, 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 way down south Arizona. So it's right now it's a little too crazy to get him to come on up and sign books. He's agreed to sign some book plates. So any of the books that you buy through us, we're going to be putting in a book plate signed by Wes. No doubt about it that when the next book comes out and we can actually have them physically up here, and it's a good reason to do it, and it's not 116 degrees like it is today, you know, you can get the book signed.
And these are special special SEAL Team 666 book plates too.
Nice.
So they're one of a kind.
And actually for both books. So the other book, as much as I hate to pull away from Bone Chase.
No, let's talk about Aliens Infiltrator.
Alien Infiltrator. So this is, and I had to look up the full title, and I apologize here. That's why I looked down. This is going to be the prequel, or Alien Infiltrator is a prequel to a game coming out published by, let's see here, now it's coming up on my PlayStation app. Cold Iron Studios, called Aliens Fireteam Elite.
Yes.
This is going to be a third-person cooperative survival shooter game that involves a group trying to stay alive while aliens are attacking them. So I think this is kind of an interesting conundrum that they gave you. Here they are giving you this high action video game, and they're saying write the prequel to what's going to be happening, where it's going to be this multi-group player you know, environment. I was trying to come up with the right word there, but how did this come about? I mean it's cool, but I'd be a little scared.
So I've already worked in the franchise before doing short story. Steve Sappel is the editor at Titan, the acquisition editor for especially Aliens and, you know, a lot of the other things like that. And he and I had wanted to work together in a novel for a while. Uh-huh. And we just hadn't been able to find the right project. And he emailed me about this and talked to my agent, and we talked, and we decided, okay, let's try this one. But it was a challenge because this was the first book where Disney had bought Fox. So not only did I have to work with Fox, I had to work with Disney, and I had to work with the gamers. Mm-hmm. So I had to, and I had to work with Steve. You know, I had four mothers to this work I was doing, and I'm the only father, and I'm trying to make this work. So it took us about 3 months to get the outline to where everyone liked it, just because, you know, we had to socialize things with people who sometimes weren't used to working with authors like me, and they didn't understand that, like, if I give you an outline and I give you like a paragraph and I say this is what the chapter is going to be, they would ask questions, well, like, what else? It's like, it'll be in the chapter, you just have to trust me. And so eventually they came around to the point where they trusted me, and it came out to be a great novel. I mean, it's selling like blockbusters, and the game, I'm told, is just a beautifully visual game. And what it is my game, or my book is a setup. It's a full-fledged novel, and then at the end of my novel is where the game begins. So if you want to play the game, read my novel, because not only are there probably Easter eggs, right, but I was able to create two brand new aliens that are now in the Alien franchise that have never been there before.
You know, it's sort of interesting to think of Disney owning Aliens, because this is, you know, this is an adult concept here.
They own Star Wars. I mean, less, you know, they own everything, yeah, right now. So
yeah, less Mickey, you know, maybe you'd have a Mickey Mouse version of a of an alien, now that I'm thinking about it. Xenomorph is what the word I was trying to
Xenomorph.
By
the way, it's starting to thunder here. So if we start getting a little statically, it's because we're going through monsoon. So I apologize to everybody out in the wild.
So if we lose you, we'll know too, just in case, because whenever we get a monsoon, you know, you always have the option of losing the power, all that fun stuff. At least for a little while. So writing by committee is always a challenge.
It wasn't writing by committee, it was outlining by committee.
Okay. So, but still a little bit different, because you're working with did you work with the writers primarily of this game, who were kind of
outlining
and storyboarding versus the actual
game
makers themselves?
Yep. Well, the writers of the game are also the ones who actually, you know, do all the work on it. So, there was a lot of interplay and a lot of really good work that we did together that, you know, brought together, because once again, it's a military, I decided to make this a military novel. And for anyone who hasn't read Aliens Infiltrator, it's basically the Office meets Aliens. Because I had never seen a novel before or a movie before in the Aliens franchise deal with Weyland-Yutani and how corporate they are and the bureaucratic structure. So I wanted to do the bureaucracy of it. So it's definitely The Office, where you have all these different groups working not together but cross purposes with each other, that are trying to, you know, maintain or obtain the same thing. So that's what people tend to enjoy about the novel more than the blood and guts, because let's face it, it's an Aliens novel. So, you know, when you get halfway through that, you know, shit's gonna hit the fan.
You're gonna have some survival horror elements to it. But that's part of your bread and butter. That's part of what keeps you kind of going and flowing throughout the, in your horror novels. So when you're doing that, I mean, what did you do to kind of make sure that these aliens kept really fresh fresh for you, fresh for the audience?
So Palis Station, which is where everything takes place, is a remote testing location for WayU to figure out how they can weaponize alien technology, alien blood, alien DNA. And they use black goo to do it. And so, and they also, some of the scientists have used some of the local fauna and their DNA to inject into the aliens, to the xenomorphs, so that they can figure out what type of effects it would be, because they're always looking to weaponize, because that's where their money's at. And they create several different crazy aliens that can do some things that you don't want aliens to do. But at the heart of it, it's really a story about the people, right? It's about the ex. I have a group of ex-Colonial Marines who work on the station, and they have formed a group of common concern, because they're worried about what the scientists are doing. And then when shit hits the fan, they get together and they end up trying to save everybody. And of course, like most of my work, everything deals with PTSD, because I have it. Most people I know have it. And I think it's important to address it always in a positive manner.
I still have to say that one of your finest bits of writing, Grunt Life, and you really go deep into the headspace in that book and going into PTSD and the impact of it. And I still remember that scene after all of these years. I still remember that scene from that book because it was so darn powerful. And
that's my favorite opening line to any novel I've ever written. I think the opening line to Grunt Life is, it was my love of movies that made me jump off the Vincent Thomas Bridge. And that's because interesting tie-in to Aliens. The Aliens director's brother, Tony Scott, is the one who jumped off the bridge to kill himself in 2008.
Interesting. Pretty sad too. Don't know.
I think he had brain cancer, and I can't tell you anything else about why he wanted to do it. But I mean, this is the director of Top Gun, True Romance, Man on Fire. I mean, I could just name them just over and over and over. So many great movies.
Yeah, and speaking of that, Aliens is one of my all-time favorite films. The second one in the series I thought was so good. I really loved it. And it is really kind of, when you get down to it, it's basically a video game. You know,
game over, baby.
Yeah, absolutely. Three people or four people really trying to survive the entire time. And will they get through it? Won't they? And it's also probably the most high action of them. And that's how I was introduced to Aliens. What did you, I mean, in terms of that franchise and keeping close to it, were there things that you were required to keep or put in, or were you pretty much given free rein other than, you know, having the committee kind of check through your outline?
No, it took 3 months to get the outline squared. And once I got the outline squared, then I had to follow that outline. And most of it had to do with how I dealt with xenomorphs or the corporation, WayU. As far as the humans, nobody really cared. I could do whatever I wanted with them. But I mean, the franchise is based upon Weyland-Yutani, it's based and the xenomorphs. So I had to be true to all that. And of course I had to make sure that it was in line with the chronology of all the events that happened. So, you know, you have to be aware of that. Luckily, there's a huge Aliens wiki online. And I found out that let me go over here so I can get some credit.
as we're waiting here. For those of you, there we go.
I found out that Lee Brimcombe Wood published this.
Nice.
A tech manual. Right? And it was published by Titan Books. And once I found that out, I emailed Steve. And I said, dude, I need this. And he said, no problem. 2 days later, I had it. And it was a great resource material because it laid out, you know, it lays out all the weapons and all the armor and everything else like that. So I don't have to like watch the movie and go, what's the weapon called?
I think you and I have both heard of horror stories from writers who've written in the Star Wars universe. Mm-hmm. So my guess was that it was going to be sort of the same sort of thing where you're given, you know, like one of the authors that we had interviewed was literally locked in a room with a script with an armed guard, and they were only allowed to read through the script once so that they knew what was going on so they could do the novelization of the movie.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm thinking to myself, trying to commit that to memory or trying to do that. Were they as strict in terms of that, in terms of aliens, or were you just having to keep the project sort of mum?
I had to keep it mum. I couldn't mention it. I mean, there's other projects, franchise projects I'm working on right now that I can't talk about.
Yeah.
Just because the publisher wants me to keep it quiet until they are able to announce it first. Mm-hmm. And so I just have to respect that. And that's what you have to sign on to when you do mm-hmm. work for hire. I mean, the thing about a work for hire novel is you're not getting paid the most money, but sometimes you're able to work on a franchise that you really want to work on. And I love working the Aliens franchise. And I mean, there are some times where I'm like, well, I would pay you to work on this, but don't tell anybody. Oh, wait, we're on live. So
yeah,
scratch that.
Well, and it becomes canon, right? Once you write it,
it does.
A lot of this part, I think that's why a lot of writers enjoy writing these novels within these universes, is because now a lot of the publishers and a lot of the movie houses and everything say, yep, this is now canon as part of this universe and this universe's history. Mm-hmm. And that's a real honor to be able to help kind of group shape it. But you've put your stamp. It's almost like, you know, being Emperor Oaks of the Infiltrator saga, right?
For a day. Emperor Oaks for a day of the Alien universe. Yep.
Exactly. Cool. So the my question is, did you get to play the game? Did you get to go in there and do a little bit of?
So I'm in discussion with Cold Iron Studios, and they're actually going to send me a copy of the game so I can play it. I'm told the game is wonderful. I've been mentioned on Twitter a bunch of times as the author of the prequel to a game which everybody's loving. So it seems to be a really good, really awesome game. And you know, I'm not above to, you know, sit down with a glass of wine and shooting a bunch of aliens all night long. I mean that might be kind of fun.
Absolutely. And there's nothing wrong with that. I know that I actually am planning, once I read, I'm not all the way through Alien Infiltrator, but I'm a good portion into it. And I'd like to dig in a little deeper and then pick up the game afterwards and get some buddies together online and do a little co-op. Gameplay there. I always have a great time doing that. Now, in terms of that, I was just thinking IGN and some of the other game journalist locations have been talking about this game quite a bit, and I guess that it's getting really good pre-reviews, so hopefully it gets a great review when it comes out, because that always helps book sales, which is sort of funny. But this is also how, as booksellers, we get to sell your book to people who are interested in the Alien universe or who are gamers, because then we get to talk to them and say, you know what, this is the prequel to the next Aliens game that's going to be released. And
you know, I do feel fortunate that Steve asked me to do the prequel to a game like this. I mean, yeah. There were, I think, 4 Alien books that came out this year, and he could have asked me to do any one of them, and mine was the only one that was a prequel to a game. So whether or not he knew that I could deal with the bureaucracy of it or not, or he just randomly chose me, I don't know, but I appreciate the fact the editor you know allowed me to work on this project like this, because it is selling really good.
Would you think, though, that because the games industry has become billions of dollars, they make more money than movie houses, that's going to give you more exposure as a writer than your traditional movie now?
I don't think so, because it's a different readership. It's a different buying community. The people who play games don't necessarily read.
True.
But everybody watches movies.
Yeah, I can see that.
So the only reason people will buy this book is the idea that there's Easter eggs and that there's hints for the game, so that when they get in the game, they can have a better chance of, you know, going through it. And there are some things in the book that if once they read it, they'll be like, oh, hey,
I do this, or hey, if I see this come up, maybe I should do XYZ.
Sure.
That's smart. That is a good little nod, and it honors the game players as well. Wes, somebody in the audience this is a digressive question here, but he says, I suppose somebody has already asked this, but what is that biographical thing on the wall? And what is it? It looks like
this.
Yep.
That was an article from a local newspaper when The Rock decided to option my novel SEAL Team 666. And it's just something to wear when I'm feeling down, when I'm feeling like I can't do anything, when I'm feeling like, you know, I totally suck at writing, I turn around for a second, I look at that and I go, well, maybe I'm not so bad. And it gives me that just little spur of optimism. And it just jacks up my ability just a little bit. So in Zoom days, it's been interesting because I've been in a lot of Zoom meetings with different businesses and different things like that. And a lot of people ask me about that. And I never really thought about that, being back there as being anything other than something for me, right? Because I don't have an I love me wall anywhere in the house. And a lot of people think it's like, well, this isn't an I love me thing. No, it's a reminder. It's just a reminder of just a moment in time to where I was able to achieve something, and that's still going on. The whole thing is still working, and I hope to achieve more.
What I'm really impressed with is we have discovered, that a lot of writers got stymied by the pandemic, and I think it happens, right? This was just monumental. And you happen to come out with two books in a year during one of the toughest times in our American history.
Three, because I wrote a book you don't know about that's with my agent, so.
The third, excellent. We'll call it The Secret Third.
It's actually called Red Unicorn, and it's in the Giant series. Nice. So, and it takes place in 1984 Argentina. During the Falklands War.
So we're going to see something new coming out of it. That's incredible. So it sounds like you've kept yourself motivated and you've used your time during this pandemic pretty darn well.
Well, you know, I also teach college. I also am a life coach. I do a lot of different things. And I mean, writing's a passion. I mean, I love to do it. I mean, right now I have, like I said, I have four books due in 2 years. I have three books contract that Jonathan Mayberry and I signed together that we're doing for Atheon Books. And then I have another book coming out from Solaris. And then in, I think, September, you'll like this. So I have Preacher's Daughter, Save the World's novel coming out. Preacher's Daughter from Burning Sky and Dead Sky. And this is called A Hole in the World. She has left Boy Scouts team, is now as part of Special Unit 77. And she gets delegated to go to England, Great Britain, because there's a missing city.
Oh, that's cool.
A city just disappeared. And nobody, and most people are like, there's no city that disappeared. What do you mean? There's just nobody know. They don't even recognize the fact it's gone. And the same thing happens in America. And so they have to get to the bottom of it. And And this is a kitchen sink fairy with weapons novel.
I'm glad you're bringing us back to that world, because I really enjoyed that world. And Preacher's Daughter
is a great character too.
Yeah, she is. And I do have to say that your website is a wonderful resource for those who are up and coming writers, for those who want to learn the craft. You give a lot of sage advice off of your website, and we've actually done some really wonderful, we turn people over to your website actually when they're wanting to learn how to write, because you've got a lot of great writers. And it's clear that you enjoy writing, because you continue producing books that give me a ton of joy to read, and are clear that you enjoy writing what you're writing. And that's exciting. It's exciting when a new book comes out, because you can tell a lot. Marlene Schmoss says, you've done Ghost Heart with your wife. Any more collabs in the works?
We have a collab in the works that we can't talk about. You'll find out about this collab in about 3 months, but it's going to be wonderful, and everyone's going to be excited once they find out.
And I've been squinting throughout this because I've got funny light in the office, and if I put my glasses on, you just see the screen in my glasses, so I don't think that that's really... So sorry about that, everybody. Let me see if I have any more questions here.
And hello to Marlene.
Let's see here. Let's see. And I think we've got, I was just going through the questions, making sure, you know, you've got so many great comments on this, and
can't see any of the comments because I'm on like the different feed. So
you're on the different feed. You're on the Zoom feed. Marlene says she has a big smile. Hi back at you. When we post this, if anybody wants to ask further questions, of course, Wes can always take a look and respond on our Facebook Live. So Wes, we've got a lot of secret stuff coming out from you pretty soon, which is awesome. You've written two incredible books, and Bone Chase comes out in trade paperback at the end of the month. Alien Infiltrator is already out. You can get them at any bookstore, but we're one of the few places where you can get a signed book plate from Wes that we're going to be
the only place. The books. You're the only place you can get that.
Excellent. I didn't know about special bookshops in Sierra Vista or something.
No, we don't have a bookstore in Sierra Vista.
Wow.
I know. Wow.
Sorry to hear that. But there's other places you can go, so long as you pick up a book through Wes, because we want to see more. And wherever you buy your books, we want to see more in Bone Chase. I would love to see you write more in the Alien series as well, because that's been a blast. And I can't wait to see what else is coming from you. Wes, we're at our hour, so I better let you go. Thank you so much for doing this and taking the time to talk about two books.
You know, Pat, I appreciate you and the Poison Pen, you know, taking the time for me. You know, it means a lot to me, because, you know, the Poison Pen is such a big bookstore. It's such an important bookstore in the industry that being able to be part of any sort of book signing or virtual or even in person is a big deal. So thank you.
Oh, no problem. I've got to say that we wouldn't be here without you. It's mutual. We wouldn't be out here without our greatest customers. We really do have the best customers in the world. And it, for me, when I come in and work at the front of the bookstore and get to talk with people about books, it is the best joy in the world. And I get to put books in people's hands and watch them smile. So that's, I love that. It just, it makes you feel good. So I appreciate you providing books that we can hand easily and comfortably over to customers to know that they'll enjoy.
So before we go, I want to point out that an author that you turned me on to about 5 or 6 or 7 years ago, Richard Lang, is going to be doing a virtual book signing at your store here in about 2 weeks, right?
Right, exactly.
And
just like what we're doing here now.
And I'm really excited about that because Richard's a former Marine, and he writes much in the vein of Don Winslow, and he writes really good Southwestern Americana, visceral, suspenseful thriller type work. And I haven't read his new book, but I'm really looking forward to it. And I just want to give Richard a shout out because I'm a huge fan of his, and we've exchanged a few emails over the years. And I just want to make sure that he gets some love.
Absolutely. And maybe you'll pop on to our Facebook Live signing.
I will.
Say hey, because that's always a lot of fun when we get to see familiar faces and familiar names, and we get to shout out your name a little bit too. So yes, and we are doing another program with him. And I know that Barbara, she's been the one who's read his book and she really enjoyed it. So we'll be having signed copies of that one here as well. Wes, thank you so much. I will see you probably in a few months for the next book. And don't be a stranger here. And everybody, thank you so much for watching and sticking around with us today.
Hello. We hope you're enjoying our programs and podcasts with authors. We'd like to expand them, and your help would be appreciated. Please make a donation at poisonedpenfoundation.org. 100% of the proceeds will go to help connect authors with readers in this difficult time. Thank you.